There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
You are listening to DubaiEye103.8. You're listening to The Grill. We're live this beautiful Saturday afternoon from Barasti, live from the rooftop garden down here at Barasti. Basically, come on down to Barasti and go north. Not in terms geographically, just head as high as you can down here and you will find us broadcasting between the hours of 4 and 7 o'clock and a packed show for you today. There's Premier League actions, the big early kickoffs across Europe as well. We're building up to the Super Bowl. We've got cricket to talk about, all sorts of different formats of cricket and plenty of developing stories there, both locally and internationally. Rugby fans are well catered for, not just down here at Barasti where you can win big down live at Barasti, but we're also getting ready for, on the big screen, the first game of this year's 2018 RBS Six Nations. We have got the Winter Olympics just around the corner. We've got a very noisy 16th over in America at the moment to talk about, and much, much more. Introduce you to the Grill panel in just a few moments' time. We've got plenty of live guests, opportunities to win between now and 7, and as always, your say as well. So please do drop us your thoughts now by texting us on 4001, or you can also have your say online. It is at Dubai iSport. Best thing to do, though, it is a beautiful afternoon. I know we say that year in, year out, week in, week out, but it is this time of year you want to be sitting up here on the rooftop garden down at Barasti. Also, sorts of food and beverage opportunities to take forward to welcome in a new Six Nations Championship. So come on down here, get settled in and get ready for some world-class sport. Do send us your thoughts though, 4001. Yeah, you're listening to The Grill. We're live from Barasti where the game is always on.
This is The Grill. Get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
Good to have you with us. Just a quick reminder of those numbers. If you want to give us a call, 04-423-1010. That'll give you a direct line into the studio. Say hello to Elaine, but be polite to her, and she might patch you through to us here from our broadcast position up at Barasti. Benji's on the ones and twos. Good to have him. Hex been here since last Saturday, I think. He's still here doing his bits and pieces. And is obviously the branding dude. The branding dude's been and gone, has he? Yeah, he's been and gone. He's put up his things, and he's gone for a little kip in the car park, and he'll be back around about... five. What's his name again? I always forget his name. What's his name?
Arshan,
if you're listening, we'll see you around about 6:55, my friend. He'll be in for his slice of pizza. But plenty of live guests to look forward to between now and then, and lots to talk about as well. The voice you heard there is the head of sport at ARN. It is Mr. Chris McCarty. He's the man who is not getting a huge amount of sleep at the moment, but all with good cause. It's the silly season. There's plenty going on.
There's so much going on, Tom. A very good afternoon to you. A very good afternoon to the listeners. And a very good afternoon to Arshan as well. I do apologise for forgetting his name. I'm not exactly going to be getting on any Christmas card lists if I keep forgetting my peers' names.
I've been in the station for 10 years, mate. I still can't remember it.
Terrible, so it is. But yes, it is a busy time of sport. I'll put that down to the reason why I keep forgetting my peers' names. But yeah, so much going on. Big day of Premier League action. Archie will be all over the Super Bowl as well. And the Six Nations kicks off a little later today. And as a Scottish fan, I know you're a proud Scot as well, Tom, there's reason to be optimist.
Indeed. It's been described as the most open of Six Nations in recent history, possibly ever. I mean, we always have these hyperboles being trotted out before any tournament, don't we, Arch? But it looks like the evidence is there that could stack up. Or are we just going to see one team dominate this one?
No, I think there's a number of teams that can lay claim to the Six Nations crown this year. It's the 124th edition of this final tournament, the 19th edition of the Six Nations Championship. First edition was way, way back, 1883, where it all started off. And this is really, I guess it's easy to say, the Northern Hemisphere's premier international rugby competition. Let me mark your card for today. 6:15 is the kickoff for the first match, UAE time. That's the one in Cardiff. Wales at home to Scotland. Should be a cracker. Two teams that have had their injury issues going into this match. Scotland showed some fantastic form in the autumn. Wales have got Warren Gatland back, fresh off his successful Lions campaign. Of course, Gatland wasn't there last year. And Wales trying to get a bit of revenge for Scotland's upset last year, really, in last year's Six Nations Championship. So get on down to Barasti. Kick off at 6:15. There's a big, big rugby activation here, which has an amazing prize, and so get on down if you're a rugby fan on the big screen.
That's the voice of Mark Archer, our rugby correspondent, rugby expert. Prize is not top of his priority list though, because Chris McCarty's got the details on this. Basically, activation, is that right? You've got to get your boots on?
It is, yes. Get on down here. You've got to purchase some of the black stuff. Ireland's finest. If you do that, you get yourself into the activation. It's running all the way up until kickoff of Wales Scotland. That one getting underway at 6:15. The prize at the end of all of this. Now, if you are the team that tops, basically it's a passing challenge. You're going to get 2 minutes, 10 balls in hand, and you've got to get as many points as you possibly can. That then, if you do set the highest score over the next 2 hours, 15 minutes, that then puts you into the final on February the 24th. There'll be another little run of activities. If your team, and it's up for a team of four, wins that, an all-expenses-paid trip, flights, accommodation, tickets to Twickenham, England, Ireland. It is St Patrick's weekend as well. It is money. Yes, okay, money can buy that trip. It would just cost you an awful lot of money to do so. So if you fancy your rugby skills, if you fancy popping on down to Barasti, do so. You've got about 2 hours to set the total. And who knows, you could be flying off to Twickenham March, when is it, 17th?
March 17th. And well, this is the final match or the final weekend of the Six Nations Championship. Of course, everyone remembers the decider, the Grand Slam decider, when Ireland pipped England in Dublin last year, of course. And this is what many people, many of the pundits are saying, this will be the key match of this year's championship at Twickenham, England taking on Ireland, probably the two strongest teams on paper in the championship. Can England go back-to-back-to-back in the Six Nations?
Getting all McCaffrey on us, doing all this, aren't you? Giving the table a pounding there. Thank you, Archie. Listen, you've marked our cards in terms of Six Nations. Chris McCarthy, you got the Premier League today, amongst other leagues to keep an eye on. Mark our card. What's coming up?
Yeah, early kickoff in the English Premier League. It comes from a rather wet turf moor. It's Burnley, currently sitting in seventh. What a job Sean Dyche has done at that football club. They will be taking on the runaway leaders, your champions elect. 15 points clear are Manchester City at the top of the Premier League. They are the visitors to Turf Moor this afternoon, the early kickoff in the English Premier League. I will give you team news in just a moment. Up in Scotland as well, the early kickoff sees Kilmarnock. They are taking on the champions elect up there in Scotland. It is Celtic making the journey down there. And what I can tell you is that Charlie Muzunda, on loan from Chelsea, he makes his first start for Celtic. I expect him to light up Scottish football between now and the end of the season. He's on loan, actually, till the end of next season. He's a wonderful talent, is Charlie Muzunda, the young Belgian, and I expect him to run the whole of the Scottish leagues, the defences, a merry dance over the course of the next 18 months. The boy is box office. I think he'll go on to bigger and better things far beyond Celtic in future years. But that's the early kickoff. Kilmarnock Celtic, the early kickoff in the Premier League, though, is Burnley against Manchester City.
There's an early kickoff in the Highland League today as well. We've got
is
one
there?
Yeah, before it gets too dark. Devonvale taking on Fraserburgh.
Yes, Fraserburgh. Bit of a derby. In fact, one of our next guests actually represented one of those clubs, Devonvale. A big team for Highland League. And I cut my teeth as a journalist reporting
really?
On one of our next guests. And
Devonvale.
Well. Devonvale.
Sounds like it's out of Lord of the Rings.
It does. It's, I can tell you, Devonvale in a little town called Banff. Up in the northeast,
yeah,
you know Banff, do you? So up in the northeast of it, I say Banff, it's actually Macduff, which is, yeah, going into a whole different geographical. What was that?
Shakespeare, isn't it?
No,
it is.
That's the Simpsons.
listen, there's also an early over in Spain as well. There's been a goal as well in the first 10 minutes there. We'll get you the identity of the score, but a scorer in that one. Iber taking on Sevilla in an early there. Next game's there. Real Betis taking on Villarreal. That one's at 7:15 this evening. Full schedule for you around about 6:30 this evening in the German Bundesliga. You're going to have to wait a bit later tonight for games from Italy and France, respectively. But we will be building up to all of those a little later on in proceedings. We've got live football for you as well to look forward to. Arsenal against Everton promises to be a cracker. That's your late one at 9:30 this evening. Our feature game at 7 o'clock.
Old Trafford. It is Manchester United against Huddersfield Town. Of course, Huddersfield Town beating United earlier on in the campaign. It will be Alexis Sanchez making his home debut for Manchester United. So that one is our featured match from 7 p.m.
Looking forward to all of that. We've just done the rugby and just done the football. There's plenty more going on for golf fans, for tennis fans, for cricket fans, for rugby league fans, and much, much more. And of course, a build up to the Super Bowl, which has got all people talking around the globe. We'll have that for you coming your way in just a few moments' time. We take a short break. When we come back, do stay tuned with us, and we will be with you in just a few moments' time. We will, of course, keep the information coming your way as well. Let's just turn to the cricket, because we got results from the cricket from earlier on today, because I know that your mob were playing, weren't they?
Yeah, we're done and dusted. That was the T20 International over in Sydney. The Aussies taking on the New Zealand Black Caps, and a big win for the Aussies. 7-wicket victory in the T20 match. New Zealand batted first, 117 for 9 their 20 overs, and Australia were chasing 95 and 15 overs. It was Duckworth-Lewis method, and they knocked them off after 11.3 overs, 96 for 3. So a 7-wicket win to the Aussies. Stumps on day 4, it's a run fest in Chittagong. I can tell you Sri Lanka finished today 713 for 9 declared. Bangladesh in their second innings are 81 for 3. Hundreds for the Sri Lankans to Mendes, De Silva and Silva. So going into day 5, the final day in Chittagong, it's Sri Lanka have a lead over Bangladesh by 119 runs with 7 wickets in hand. And also congratulations must go out to the Indian under-19 national side. They have won the ICC under-19 World Cup in Tauranga in New Zealand. They defeated the Aussies by 8 wickets. So congratulations to the Indian under-19 cricketers.
We've also got details on that early in the football. Let's get the latest. Chris McCarty.
Yeah, I can give you team news for this one. We are, 15 minutes away from kickoff at Turf Moor. As I say, it's first versus seventh, or seventh versus first. Burnley, let's start with the team news from the home team this afternoon, because they hand a debut for the first time to Aaron Lennon, the former England international. He could yet battle his way back into Gareth Southgate's plans. I don't see it, but he makes a start on the right wing for Burnley. Nick Pope, who has come in, has deputised magnificently for Tom Heaton this season. He starts in goals. It's a back four of Phil Bardsley, Kevin Long, Ben Mee and Charlie Taylor, the former Leeds left back. Then comes the midfield four of Aaron Lennon, Jack Cork, Jeff Henrick and Johan Berg Gudmundsson. Ashley Barnes will then sit just behind the big man up front, Sam Vokes. He'll be looking to use his physical presence to great effect this afternoon. For Manchester City, bidding to extend their lead at the top of the Premier League to at least 18 points for a few hours at the very least. It's Ederson in goals. It's a back four of Kyle Walker, Vincent Kompany, Nicolas Otamendi and Danilo. Midfield three of Kevin De Bruyne, Fernandinho and Ilke Gundogan. And then it's the front three, Bernardo Silva, Raheem Sterling with a... I was going to say the big man. It's not the big man.
The big man.
It's the wee man. Sergio Aguero up front for Manchester City.
He is wee, isn't he?
He's diminutive.
He's not big. He's not a big one.
He's not. But he's no less effective for the size of the man as Sergio Aguero. On form, he is the best striker in the Premier League.
We will have more on all the wider world of sport in just a few moments' time. I believe we can go to a short break when we come back. Live guest for you down here at Barasti. We are live from Barasti. This is The Grill with you through till 7.
Let's go!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
You're listening to The Grill, broadcasting live from Barasti, where the game is always on. We've got an early game in Spain at the moment. That's where the early game is on at present, whilst we wait for the early kickoff in the Premier League. That's been a goal in Spain. It's Eibar taking on Sevilla in this one. Chris McCarty's got an eye on Spain for us at the moment.
I've got an eye on Spain an awful lot of the time, Tom. Sevilla, of course, Manchester United's opponents in the last 16 of the UEFA Champions League. They've made a change of manager in recent weeks as well. We've seen Vincenzo Montella, the Italian, take charge there. He's had a decent run of results of late. What I can tell you, though, is currently 19 minutes on the clock over in Spain. It's Eibar 1, Sevilla 0, and it's Kiki on the score sheet inside the opening 70 seconds. So Kiki on the score sheet for Eibar. It's Eibar 1, Sevilla 0.
Talking more football in just a few moments' time. We've got Terry Kidd with us. He's the director of football at City Football Club. You're going to be hearing a lot more about City FC in the days, the weeks and the months to come here in the UAE. Terry, good to have you on board.
Thanks, gent.
We will get more from you in just a few moments' time, but I just want to introduce our guest that alongside me as well, because it's been, I think it's fair to say, it's been a busy weekend for Hassan.
Yes.
He's been complimenting the sporting philosophy at the heart of its brand key positioning. Swiss watchmaker TAG, or Tag Heuer's continued collaboration with Arab Watch Guide, founder and Ironman competitor Hassan Akras, saw the brand once again come together for a bit of cycling, a bit of swimming and a bit of running at yesterday's Ironman here in the region. So I suppose first and foremost, it is welcome to you, Hassan. Thanks so much indeed for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
How did yesterday go?
It was good. It was brutal, but it was I survived.
You survived?
I'm here, so.
Happy with the times?
I could do better, I think, but it's okay. I mean, I finished it.
What I've been amazed about is the growth of Ironman competition here in the region. And I've seen it sort of firsthand in terms of not competitive, but certainly from a coverage and a spectator's point of view. The amount of infrastructure that went into Ironman this year, the amount of infrastructure from the police, the closing of roads, the extending of the course as well, seemed to be more than ever before. Is that,
is that true.
A fair assumption?
Yeah, definitely. I think yesterday there was about 2,200 contestants. It's the largest ever in the entire region, even larger than the one done in Bahrain. And it was very, very well done, very well organized. The streets were properly closed and everything was properly done. So for a competitor, I felt safe. And even like riding the bicycle on the roads, there were no issues. So it was very well organized, actually.
We're going to talk about your day job as founder of Arab Watch Guard in just a little while. We're also going to talk about your weekend job and your evening job, which is, of course, training with Ironman. Is it something you got into here in the region, or is it something that has been part of your DNA?
Ironman, actually, it started just a year ago, so it's fairly new. It's a totally new challenge. I've never cycled before, never swam before. I just used to run and climb mountains and do some sports. But the whole triathlon has been exactly a year. The whole project and the challenge, it was a year ago.
So why?
I think I like to torture myself or something like that. No, a year ago, I just I wanted something new. I wanted to challenge myself mentally and physically, and I wanted something that could push the limits. Ironman seemed to be the perfect candidate for that. And again, I wanted to start something totally different, like start a new activity, learn how to swim, learn how to cycle properly, more professionally, let's say. So it seemed the perfect fit. You know, it was the solution for what I was looking for.
In terms of making that decision and then make it become a reality and be able to launch, you know, hashtag don't crack under pressure, which we're going to talk about in just a few moments time. And obviously that's something you need to do with a team around you. There's a lot of hours that are put in by you personally as well. You've had a massive brand also get behind you with Tag Heuer.
Tag Heuer, of course.
I mean, is that something that you, did you go knocking on their door? Did they come to you? Is it something that sort of fitted the mold for them?
It was both, actually. When I started the project and the idea, I wanted a partner. I mean, I live in the horology world. I love watches. I collect them. And I always wanted to have a partner that is in the watch world that could support me in that path and the whole challenge. And it just came to me that Tag Heuer is the best option for that because they support riders, they support cyclists, they're into sports. We share the same DNA, the same vision. So I actually proposed the idea to the team. I came to them and I told them, look, I'm an amateur. I want to do this challenge. I want to start from scratch. It fits. It's don't crack under pressure as well. Would you be interested to partner with me? And the answer was definitely yes. So
I could ask a really stupid question here. The boys here will know that that's really quite regular around about this time of a weekend. But hashtag don't crack under pressure. I suppose there are a few clues in the title there, but what was the thinking behind it?
It's moments where you, let's say, for example, I'll give you actually an example yesterday that happened to me. We started with a swim, the open waters. It was extremely windy and it was extremely wavy. There were probably 3 centimeters of waves. So I was swimming one step forward and I was pushed 3 steps backwards every single time. So in any instance, you would kind of give up at some point. You'd be, okay, you know, I'm not moving, I'm not getting to the target. I need to do 2 kilometers of swim and I'm not moving forward. And then you think about it, you know, it comes to your mind, don't crack under pressure. It's like, no, you have to push yourself to the limits. You have a goal, you want to get there, just do it. Keep on pushing until you get there. So it fits exactly the spirit, you know, that kind of mental challenge.
What's the reaction been to the challenge in the build-up to the race and, of course, what, the 24 hours since the race?
24 hours since the race, I'm feeling good. So I'm not sore, surprisingly. I thought I'll be crawling today in the morning. The build-up was actually the fun part was the build-up to this event because it actually took me an entire year to get there. When I started exactly a year ago, January last year, 2017, I could swim 25 meters only. Probably ride another 10K and and just run. I was good at running. And now I was able to do 2 kilometers of swim, 90 kilometers of riding, and half marathon all together at once. So the whole, you know, the whole journey is the beauty of the whole, you know, challenge.
Does that ring any bells with
with you, Arch, or was it?
I did a triathlon about 30 years ago, but Chris McCarty is our resident cycling expert, as we know from past year. Chris was one of the. Chris took part in a team in a Dubai iSports team event at the ITU event in Abu Dhabi.
Okay.
And he was the man that broke records on the cycle.
I wish. It took me half a day to do 20K on said bike.
I was like that when I first started, to be honest. I remember I was proud. I was doing 20K in probably 2 hours.
So I suppose the question is, what next for you as well? If you've met this challenge, are you setting yourself other challenges?
So I kind of enjoy now cycling a lot. So I think I want to improve my timing on the cycle, because I think there's a lot more, there's room for improvement. I can do maybe longer distances, you know, maybe participate in the Dubai Tour or the Abu Dhabi Tour or something like that. But it just needs a bit more dedication on the cycling side instead of doing the triathlon.
Next question I'm going to ask you is something that I'm going to put to Terry in a few moments' time as well, because one thing that Chris and I and Arch and the rest of the team at Dubai Eye and us inspired by sports speak about a lot is this place, you know, this place, the ability this place has to get under your skin, but also to prompt you to do something or take a risk that maybe you wouldn't do in other parts of the world. Is that something that, I mean, would you have done this sort of event, would you have taken on this sort of challenge personally anywhere else or other than the UAE or Dubai?
I think it helps to be here, definitely, because you have all the facilities. The weather is amazing most of the time of the year. The facilities are there, the cycling tracks, the running tracks, the swimming at the beach anytime you want. So definitely this helps a lot to achieve your goal.
Talking of achieving goals, Terry Kidd is director of football at City Football Club. City FC taking the town by storm. Could you have set this sort of structure up anywhere else in the world, or is this a part of the world that sort of influenced you and that prompted you to make this decision?
100%. I've been here just short of 12 years now, so very much ingrained to the framework, if you like. Having learned a lot from an operational and a commercial front, I think Dubai is good at that. I think just to jump on the back of that little piece there, definitely the culture and the climate allows you to maybe push boundaries, whereas in Europe in particular, things are quite regimental, structured, and that can have a positive impact, of course, on developing, especially youth. But certainly here in the Middle East, there is an element of freedom and autonomy to go and have a go, and you know, we're certainly seeing the benefits of that so far.
Talk to me about the culture of City FC. We like talking about team culture, don't we, Chris? We like
Absolutely.
A bit of team culture, don't we?
We love team culture.
But you must sit down when you're talking about that, the sort of planning. Yeah, okay, there's the kit. Yeah, there's the badge. And we won't get onto badges with Leeds fans out there listening on at the moment as well. But the culture, is that something you start from the off, something you want to create from the club?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you don't have a long-term plan, then the short-term plans are going to be short-lived. And, you know, football here in the region is very, very competitive. Let me make that really clear. We operate in a very competitive space. There's a lot of different academies, obviously with different objectives and vocations out there as to what their end goal is or their end outcome is for the students. So first and foremost, we almost work back to try and create, right, what is the end goal? What is the exit route look like for our students? We sort of pride ourselves in two development forks. One is obviously to try and encourage and pursue as much of a professional outlet as possible, which is relative to how I've recruited, in particular my coaching team. And second to that is the collegiate path, which is something I'm really a huge advocate of. Coming from a professional background, I think academic wasn't as much of a priority, certainly from the generation that I'm from, but appreciating how important that is to produce smarter players on the pitch means obviously good students in the class, and that is certainly a culture and a DNA that we're looking at when recruiting players into City FC.
You mentioned two facets there, Terry, and it would be interesting to get your thoughts. Let's drill down on a couple of those if we can. We know, we have spoken, and you're well aware of it as well, it is such a competitive market out here. We can't exactly pin down the number of academies there are. We believe it's somewhere 60-plus in Dubai alone, football academies out there. In terms of Dubai City Football Club, your own little baby, you've talked about the collegiate programme. How else do you differentiate? How else do you make your product stand out from the rest?
Yeah, so I mean, there's some fantastic programs out there, by the way, and I just need to make that clear. when we, you know, sat down and mapped out how we want City Football Club to be different and to be unique, and as I said earlier, to create a true pathway for kids to exit Dubai to play at either a college or a professional level. You know, first and foremost for me, I start with my staff. You know, I've recruited recruited well. I'm very happy with my team internationally and locally, of course. And they bring a plethora of talent as it relates to having that elite experience coaching at top level. And I think that there's certainly a niche for that locally. And not just that, sports science, we've invested heavily in that to ensure that the players can engage with their development, can engage with their progress, can engage with their shortfalls, so that they can have that accountability. And I don't think there's enough of that across the globe. I think the players have to be more accountable for the performance, but to do that, you've got to engage them with what their particular individual learning program might be. And not only that, competitively, we do pride ourselves on our competitive games programs. We operate under the UAE Football Association umbrella. We look to support, everything, every ball that's being kicked coming out of the FA, and that is something that we really want to continue to hold hands with the Federation moving forward. And, the analysis part as well, again, to support the player development within the club is key, where we record and film every game. The kids can watch the highlights. The kids can log into their profiles to see what their statistics are, possession-based, passing-based. The physiological side is important, as we well know. And, that we feel is starting to really make some noise within the competitive space. And, recruitment for us is it seems to be a consequence of that.
It's interesting you talk there, Terry, about coaching and the key and how that's key. And that's something we talk about here on the show. And Chris talks about Sport Tonight week in, week out. Paul Espy is going to join us in a few moments' time, a man who's given lots to coaching in the tennis arena here. And Hassan alongside us as well. I mean, hop from the Ironman yesterday here in Dubai, which is just the latest. You've taken part in Ironmans and triathlons across the whole of the region and the build-up to this, the Dubai event. Could you have done that without the professional tutelage and the training that you've taken on board over the last 12 months?
No, definitely not. I mean, I was the first thing that I did when I decided to do Ironman is I looked for a coach, for somebody who actually did Ironman several times. Got in touch with her, discussed what I wanted and how fast I want to get there. And then we built up an entire program during the year on how to train, now what kind of activities I need to strengthen myself in, how to train for that, and then we just build up across like the whole plan for that.
And talking of the talent, obviously Terry's there trying to unearth the talent of tomorrow as well. I mean, do we have the talent of Ironman and triathlon of tomorrow as well? Do we see more and more international athletes and competitors coming here to train? Because I'm just looking at the fact, I mean, you've taken part in events in Abu Dhabi, Ras Al Khaimah, Bahrain, Oman, now here in Dubai. Yes. As well. There's all sorts of different arenas.
I'm surprised, actually. Honestly, I didn't expect the community to be that big and more international. But every time I participate in one of those triathlons or Ironman or any of those big events, I see people coming from all over the world, at least all over the region. Bahrainis, Qataris, Saudis, British, South Africans, everybody's here. Especially yesterday, to be honest, I've seen every person on the planet.
It's really strange because I know it's one of the Arch and Chris and I talked about. You know, we were talking about that survey that they did, the Nielsen Sports and Entertainment Survey recently.
Golf number one.
Golf came out number one. I thought Ironman triathlon would be up there with the cycling as well. But it just shows the sort of breadth of sport and how sport in general is growing in the region.
I think it will get there. It will get there, I think. Yeah, soon.
Because we talk about it so often, certainly in this part of the world. We saw the 30 for 30 challenge, the Dubai Fitness Challenge, that I just need to go on my Instagram to see everyone is eating better. Or it apparently appears the people that I follow, people are eating better. They're out in the gym.
You follow Arch?
I do not follow Arch. He's not on social media. That probably explains why. But there are so many people now a little bit more body conscious, health conscious, and we're starting to see that transfer.
Yes,
I mean,
absolutely.
The figures that you mentioned there, Hassan, 2,200 taking to an Ironman. An Ironman isn't a triathlon. An Ironman is next level. That is incredible numbers for an event
absolutely.
In this part of the world.
Yeah, it's impressive, actually, to see how many people are dedicated to do this and to improve their lives, to become more fit, more healthy. And as I said, I think it's growing. Like, through the years since I started 2017 and now, I can see the numbers growing, just the people interested. And every time I talk to somebody and they tell me, yes, I started as well. I want to be a triathlete now. I want to do cycling. I want to do one of those activities. So it's pretty impressive.
Hassan, congratulations to you on your times yesterday. All the best for events that you take up in the future. Big thanks to all the team at TAG for setting this one up for us as well. Arab Watch Guide, TAG Heuer, I'm sure those are sources that people can go out to find out more about your progress as well.
Yes.
Also on social media, amongst others?
Yes, social media. I have my Instagram account, which is called Arab Watch Guide, where I put everything, my entire journey, watches, lifestyle, everything.
It's called hashtag Don't Crack Under Pressure. And another box that you can tick now is that you haven't cracked under the pressure of live radio as well.
So yes.
You're well. Something of a natural, really. So Chris, myself and Art should be a little bit worried, but well done to you. Ironman yesterday, radio today. I mean, the world's your oyster tomorrow. Do what you want.
Thank you very much.
Bless you. Thanks so much indeed for your time. All the best on that particular journey. Terry, I'm going to ask you to stay with us just a little longer as well. Sure. We're going to talk more football in just a few seconds' time. If you'd like to find out more about Hassan's journey, it is hashtag Don't Crack Under Pressure. We'll find him on Instagram, the Arab Watch Guide, AWG. Find out more. We take a short break. When we come back, football and more.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
I'm going to get back to the lives in just a few moments. We're going to get back to the chat with our guests in just a few moments' time as well. What happened in Hamilton a little earlier on? Not the musical over in New York, Mark Archer, the rugby.
It's round four, of course, of the HSP Sevens World Series. It's taking place in Hamilton, New Zealand. Just to bring you up to date with what happened in the first three rounds. It all kicked off here in Dubai in December the 1st and 2nd up at the Sevens ground. South Africa were the champions. New Zealand won one league later in Cape Town. And last week, down in Sydney, the home team, the Aussies, won. So three different winners in the first three rounds of the HSP World Sevens Series. What happened today in Hamilton, New Zealand? I can tell you that South Africa, New Zealand and Fiji won their groups with 100% records. They won all their three matches. And Kenya won a tight pool D with two draws and a win. So what that means, Tom, Cup quarterfinal action is all taking place tomorrow. Fiji will take on Samoa in a South Pacific Island battle. New Zealand will take on England. Kenya will face Australia. And the fourth quarterfinal sees South Africa take on Scotland.
Killy underway against Celtic. No goals in that one. Early in the Premier League underway as well. Burnley against City. No goals in that. Some people say there aren't enough goals in La Liga. And apart from the top two teams, it's just boring. It's been a few in the first 20 minutes.
Absolutely,
over there.
Yes. 40 minutes on the clock, Tom. It's Eibar 3, Sevilla 1. Kiki opened the scoring inside the first 70 seconds or so. It was the former Celta Vigo midfielder Fabian Orellana that made it 2-0 to Eibar. Pablo Sarabia pulling one back from the penalty spot, the former Real Madrid graduate, if memory serves me correct. And then it was Ivan Ramis who was made it 3-1 after just 32 minutes. We've moved on to 40 minutes on the clock over in Spain, where it's Eibar 3, Sevilla 1.
Bang him in. Bang them in.
Need to change the channel, I think, Tom.
Kilmarnock 0, Celtic 0, Burnley 0, Man City 0. Let's hear from the Burnley manager, Sean Dyche. He's been talking ahead of this game. What else is he going to do? He's asked about the winless streak and whether he is concerned or not. What do you reckon he said?
You know, there has to be an overview of the situation, but we want to win. And that's what, you know, we hope to design the team to do. And we have done many times this season, but... You know, you go into a tough run of fixtures, you have a few injuries, and just the fact, actually, it's not just tough fixtures, because the Premier League is very unforgiving. I've said it so many times, every manager will tell you, apart from, you know, the top six managers, there's certain games they presuppose that they'll win. For everyone else, I think every game's a tough game.
Oh, to be an interviewer of football managers, because guess what? Pep Guardiola's been asked with a couple of months left in this season. He's been asked, I'm sure something hasn't been asked already this season, does he think the season is done and dusted? Is it all over?
It's 13 games, 39 points to play. We have 15, so it's not over. So we have an amazing tough games to play. For example, tomorrow, we cannot deny, and everybody knows here in England, how complicated it is playing in Burnley, and after you have to go to Stoke City, for example, Goodison Park, and we have against Arsenal, Tottenham, United, Chelsea. Definitely it's not over.
No goals in either of those. Both managers there stating the bleeding obvious, thankfully. Our director of football here at the moment of City Football Club here in Dubai, newest football club to arrive in the city, Terry Kidd, is here, giving it to us straight as well. Terry, is that, I know you played to a high level, I know that football is in your DNA, it's part of you. Is it something that could more be done with post and pre-match interviews for managers and players?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're a bit tedious at the moment. The questions, I think you can see the managers game by game are running out of patience, you know, as the questions come in. But yeah, it's.
I mean, you've been there, McCarty. You've done that sort of role, but when you're back in Scotland and the UK as well, are there certain questions you can only ask?
No, not at all.
Can you go off-piste or not?
You can go off-piste, but I think it's going off-piste in the right way. You're not going to ask what they've had for breakfast in the morning because no one cares about that. But there are ways you can phrase questions, and there are some journalists, and again, I'm not saying for one second that I know everything and that I'm perfect, but there are some journalists who are just better than others. That's the nature of business. There are some journalists who have the wherewithal to ask the right questions. I think that's the phrase to use. There are others that perhaps will be a little shirked by the presence of a Pep Guardiola in front of you, and they might just ask the questions that when they look back and listen to themselves asking those questions, think, what on earth was I doing asking that? Because Pep Guardiola is always going to state, you could roll that out, that's a cliched answer. Of course the season isn't over, it's 13 games, and the managers now, even more so than ever before, they're always very, very careful what was said. They don't want anything to be misconstrued. Yeah, and there's that as well, there's the hand over the mouth that you don't know half the time what they're blooming saying. But managers more than ever are way more careful about what they're saying to a media, because we've seen it time and time again. There are some tabloids, there are some websites seeking hits, seeking visitors to their website that will twist and turn what you've said, and that's why the managers are giving these stock answers.
Part of the problem is, as soon as the journalists ask something sort of verging on the controversial about a referee's decision or a goal that was disallowed, etc., etc., and therefore they speak their mind and they come out and be overly critical, well, they face, you know, sanctions and reprimands from the FA or from the governing bodies. So that's one issue. And as soon as some journalists really want to probe and ask some sort of question that could be emotively construed by the manager, you know, criticises a team selection, etc., then that journalist kind of gets blackballed. We saw Alex Ferguson do it for a number of years. He didn't want to give interviews, I think, to the BBC. And they have to front up to their media obligations as part of their contract. So then you see the one-word answers. We've seen it with Jose before. We've seen it with a number of managers.
Gordon Strachan, a number of managers
throughout the Premier League come and do what they have to do. They answer a couple of one-word questions and they take off again. So it's not an easy job being the journalist, but I guess they've got to find some innovative ways to make it more interesting for the punters like ourselves to talk about.
Most journalists aren't living in an £856 a night hotel room in the middle of Manchester, are they?
No, they're not. In the case of Jose Mourinho, with all his technology, Wi-Fi and TV stuff.
Terry Kidd is with us here. He is the brains behind City Football Club here in the city. As Chris asked you just a few moments ago, Terry, you know, why Dubai? Why set up? Is there the appetite for it here? Yes, there is, you believe. Is there enough competition though?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's why we've pursued this. Competition is strong. As an example, we've got 10 competitive squads competing today across Dubai. Yes, from under 8 right through to under 18. And that's down at Sports City. That's in the UEFA's Youth Pro League. Our under 14s live right now are playing Al Jazeera at pro level. So yes, is the
answer. I'll get your score update on that in a minute from Chris McCarty.
Fantastic.
I'll keep an eye on it, Terry. I tell you, another interesting question. And it's probably hard to put you on the spot with this a little bit. Yes, there's competition.
But you're going to do it anyway.
But I will do it anyway. It's what I'm paid to do. I'm not like these journalists.
Give a one-word answer.
It's my interview style, Terry. I build up to placing that there to then know that the question is coming. But we talk about competition. You're right to say there's competition. So many schools and academies out there. What about the level of talent here in the region? I hear so often they need to go abroad, they need to take them back to the UK, take them to Spain, take them wherever, because there's a much more competitive environment, there's a lot more talent pool, if you will. Is that the case or is that changing?
Yeah, I mean, there's been some real true genuine success stories in the past. Yeah, there's kids playing at professional level back in England, obviously in the lower tiers. There's kids that have gone to the US to play at college level to get obviously soccer scholarships. But now, obviously, the game is advancing, as we've already spoke about. And not only us, you know, other academies, I think, are clocking on to recruitment of staff. So you've got the right people behind the programming, because you can't cut corners anymore because there's so much competition. You know, I can only speak on behalf of my own club. There's the Mourinho in me, sorry. You know, we definitely believe, again, otherwise we wouldn't be doing this. We believe that there is definitely enough talent to nurture from the 7s, 8-year-olds right through to whatever age group that is to hopefully support them to exit our program. You know, we're not shy, or we're not defensive in trying to prevent that happening. We want our players to exit from our program so that we can then build, you know, the next generation of player base from that testimonial.
One of the other things that we've talked about at length as well is currently in the current system, UE teams, we talk Al Jazeera's, Al Wazzles, Al Ahly's, it's very much an Emirati base.
Yes.
We see so many talented young kids and the likes of what you're now doing with City Football Club. You're looking to give them a platform. You're looking to give them the tools to go and succeed, whether that be in England, the US. Will there come a time, or would you like to see a time come whereby you're giving them those tools where they can go and become a success right here in the UE with an Al Ahly, with an Al Jazeera, an Al Wazzle, or whoever?
100%. That is our, if you want to talk, you know, 5-year plan. That is the plan. We want to establish ourselves as a local professional football club, competing in the Etisalat Pro League. That is the plan at top level. We've got people working on that. Obviously, it's going to be a lengthy process. There's a lot of paperwork associated to that. But before we can do that, we need to build the empire before we can go and start competing at the highest level. And that is the youth pyramid. We've got a fundamental football program which sees boys and girls enter it as young as 4 years old. And as I say, you know, hopefully the development fork out of the pyramid is to compete at professional level internationally, locally, as you say, would be a huge story for the region, and at collegiate level as well.
So I want to ask a question about, I'm fascinated about pathways, and I'm fascinated about you sort of setting this new approach to pathway programs for kids and also those wanting to take their football to the next level as well. One thing that's always struck me, and again, we're all football fans around the table, is those sort of icons you look up to, your favourite players. I've got an 11-year-old son, you know. Who's your favourite player, Dad? Who's your favourite player in the Premier League? Who's your favourite player
it's
in the
world?
It's
one of two just now, though, isn't it?
It's one of two. But, you know, he's got his Ronaldos to look up to. He's got his Paul Pogba's to look up to as a Man U fan at the moment.
For all the wrong reasons,
for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. All of the wrong reasons.
So this is the... Isn't that something that's sort of lacking here at the moment? Or are we living in such an international game at the moment that you don't actually need to have those players playing within the country?
Yeah, I think social media is helping that, right? And the kids at every corner they turn, every button they push, they've got access to, you know, the latest skill, the latest trick, the latest haircut, sadly. And that's such a distraction for the
latest
kids.
Latest dab as well.
Yeah, so I think that can translate internationally into this region. As we know, Dubai is such an international part of the world. But yeah, I don't think there's any issues locally with that because of the nature of the climate.
Going to get some more on that one, but guess what? Bit of goal.
There has indeed been a goal. 21 minutes on the clock at Turf Moor, Tom. No surprise this. They've dominated at the opening proceedings, so they have. It's Burnley 0 at Manchester City 1. Kevin De Bruyne with a short free kick on the left-hand side. He rolls the ball into Bernardo Silva, the little Portuguese magician. Just feeds it into the Brazilian Danilo. In at left-back today for the... there's injuries all around that position. Benjamin Mendy, Zinchenko. It is Danilo who's been picked today with a right foot of his. Opens his body up and just curls it into the far corner. Nick Pope, who's been brilliant for Burnley all season long. Absolutely no chance with that one. 25 yards out, 22 minutes on the clock. It's Burnley 0, Manchester City 1.
Chris, keeping an eye on the football for us. Paul Espy's joined us as well. Paul, who's got his work cut out in the weeks to come with the Dubai Duty Free Open taking place down at the Irish Village at the Dubai the Duty Free International Tennis Stadium as well. Espy, good to have you on board with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me again, Tom. Great to be here.
Who are your iconic players that you looked up to football-wise this is when growing up?
Well, it's funny you say that, because the other day I was watching the Kenny Dalglish movie, So for me, it was Kenny, King Kenny.
King Kenny every time.
And I was in tears for most of that movie, most of that documentary, I must say.
Terry's here with us from City Football Club. I suppose what I was getting to with that previous question is that we've all got international icons, and you're so right, those are the ones you look up to. Is the lack of the ability to go down to a local club here to watch football, and that's always been a whinge I've heard from, you know, you look at the Arabian Gulf League, you look at the professional setup here, how many expats are coming down to watch it? I understand the clubs want expats to come down, but are they doing enough to get expats in?
No, it's a two-way street, right? But definitely there's not enough of a community outreach to the expatriate audience to go and support the clubs. I mean, as expats around the table here, what team do we support? You know, we don't have one, right? Yeah. That's an issue. And that obviously translates into the children, who fundamentally are the people that are going to fill the seats in the stadiums. But yeah, there is an issue in terms of, you know, getting the league out to the expat audience. How and when that will happen, I don't know. I do believe, though, if they are to revise and drop the number of internationals that can compete in the local leagues, that may be a fantastic first base to assess.
It's an interesting dilemma, isn't it, Terry? Because you talk about the lack of probably supporters following the big club sides in the UAE Pro League, but then there's no shortage of top international exposure to football events and clubs coming here. We see a lot of the Premier League clubs. I think It was 3 weeks ago we had Man United, Liverpool and Celtic all in Dubai
all in
one time.
And Aberdeen.
Yeah, and Aberdeen as well, of course. We've had Spanish clubs, German clubs, Chinese Super League clubs all training in the UAE. Yeah. We had the FIFA Club World Championship. Real Madrid was here in December playing two matches against Al Jazeera, who put up a pretty good display of them in the semi-final of that. We've got that in coming up in December again. So we'll have the giants of the global club scene coming. Mm-hmm. For next January, we have 52 matches in the Asian Cup, AFC. So the likes of some of the superpowers in Asia, China, Australia, South Korea, Japan, are all here playing with the big Middle East side. So we do have some big events. You know, we're very fortunate, you know, in other sports. We're going to talk tennis in a moment with some of the best players in the world. But we do get the big players coming through here.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. For me, I do believe, I hope, the national team have to really put their mark on the international scene. I think that would definitely help, you know, generate that energy within the region. And I hope they can do that at the next major. But you're right, there's certainly enough traffic coming in and out of here. It's capturing that traffic to ensure that there's a real appetite that we can integrate and, you know, create a proper football community in a, you know, such an international part of the world. Not only that, you know, there's, I think, 60 plus, as Chris quoted, football academies. So there's certainly an appetite for football in the region. It's certainly not an issue.
Given what the process you're going through at the moment, setting up a club here, setting up a new culture, setting up a new pathway for talent coming through as well, is it something that needs to get sanctioned by the FA here? Are you in cahoots with them? Are you in negotiations with them? Have they been supportive?
They've been very much supportive of the long-term plan, which is very aggressive, by the way. We are aware of that. It's very ambitious. Obviously, there was the merger of the three Dubai clubs, Al Ahly, Shab, I think, excuse me, if I'm mistaken. Yeah, there was the merger. So obviously, there may be a concern that might happen to more football clubs here, which, you know, what does that do to the Etisalat League? So they are encouraging that. That's the message that we've been given. But as I said earlier, you know, let's get the grassroots in place. Let's get the youth system in place so that we've got players that we can, you know, promote through the program to represent us at, hopefully, first team level.
Because one thing that I think would be fascinating is seeing more and more of the, I mean, we talk about the talent coming through the ranks. We talk about the kids moving up. You know, you spoke a bit earlier about kids sort of, you know, moving over to Europe or going through the US system and things like that. Mm-hmm. But getting them experience in the club system here as well, is that a sort of goal that is attainable further down the line?
All I can say is I hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, the benefit of our program is that we're trying to bridge the gap between your commercial academies and your pro clubs. As an example of that is the contact time weekly that we provide. So our kids are training with us 4 to 5 days a week. That's unheard of weekly, and that's the same player. versus one player once a week, and then you've got another batch coming in the next day, etc. So we are trying to bridge the gap in terms of that weekly contact time, obviously with an end goal of every week is to compete to the highest level attainable, which is under the FA's umbrella. But as in terms of an environment and infrastructure or a framework, the pro clubs have got all the resources and finances I think that many clubs even in Europe could only dream of. So there's a slight frustration, but I think there's so much potential if we can just crack.
Well, this is, I suppose, and I've got to be really careful here, and Chris will tell me off if I am overstepping the line here, because I know it's a touchy subject for many out there, but it's good to see that these things are being discussed at the moment. Kids growing up in football here, be nice to get them into football clubs here. I know we've got quota systems in place at the moment. We are fundamentally looking to promote Emirati talent, but it would be nice to get more of a balance when you've got so many coming through the ranks. And
absolutely.
Again, I suppose that's something we could talk about with tennis.
Indeed, and something that I've been very, yeah, it's certainly a subject close to my heart, and I am led to believe that changes are afoot, yeah. That the powers that be
but
are
if you're
looking
born
at it,
here now.
That if you are born here, you could be an expat, but if you've lived your youth and your adolescent life here, then there needs to be a pathway. You know, I've been saying this basically since I got here. Yes, it will be a lot trickier at the elite level, at the first teams of Al Ahly, Al Wazzles, to change that. But at youth level, Tom, that's the biggest issue for me. It doesn't matter if you're Australian, South African, you're Scottish. If you're good enough, you should be fed into that youth systems at the Al Wazzles, Al Ahlys. Because why? I truly am of the belief that raises the standard of the Emirati players as well. And that's the key thing moving forward.
That's what's going to take the international team to the level that you know we all want it to be. By surrounding the locals with the best players in the region. And whether we agree or not, it is the expats.
I think even from a tennis perspective, and obviously you know I'm heavily involved in that, when I arrived here there was literally nothing that a child or player could represent. You know, when we're at home, you represent your club, you represent your school, you represent your county, you represent something. And as an individual sport, when you have the opportunity to play for a team, it's an excitement. It's something that you really, really, really aspire to do. Yeah. And it's something that you need. And it's something that, you know, the football players have benefited from for years. Rugby players, obviously, with the Six Nations being a hot topic at the moment as well. You know, tennis is an individual, very, very difficult to entice people to be part of if it's just going to be just one-on-one constantly, because there's where's the fun to that? And this is why for 5 years now I've created the National Schools Championships, which we're hosting next year. Next month. I think you're going to be part of that actually, Chris, this year. And I've been told you are. but you know that in itself gives kids the opportunity to actually represent something, to actually, you know, not necessarily just have to go on court, play a few matches. Oh, I've won a medal for myself. You're actually representing a team. And coming back to what you were saying about clubs, Terry, I think this is something which I'd love to see the infrastructure in place for all sports in the UAE. There aren't enough what we would call back home voluntary based clubs. There just aren't. And if you want to keep the community, if you want to encourage the youth of today and certainly the youth of the future, you need to have somewhere where, as a parent, and I'm not, but Tom is, you can just dump your kids. You know they're going to be safe. They can stay there 5, 6, 7 hours throughout the day. And you're not paying by the hour. I think it switches people off when you've got this whole thing of you pay by the hour for everything. It's not right. It's not going to be anything that's going to encourage the future.
Drop them off at the Rackets Club and pick them up on a Saturday evening. Drop them off there on a Thursday night. And
we'll see you on Sunday.
See you on Saturday. See you on Sunday. Enjoy the weekend. I know I will. Terry, look, we could talk a lot longer. We've just scratched the surface, really. I know you've got plenty of plans afoot. I know you've got an eye on your boys and your teams that are playing today. Sure. I suppose the question I need to ask, if people have been had their interest piqued by what you've been saying, if they want to find out more, if they want to come on down, they want to have a look, mm-hmm. if they want to get involved from mm-hmm. a playing point of view, mm-hmm. how do they go about it?
So we hold weekly trials. So we've got kids coming in for trials every week, and that is an opportunity for us to profile the player. So we track them, we get the physiological data, we get their technical data. We share that, you know, as obviously part of the conversation post your trial. And then from there we can then obviously advise whether they can attain a place in our elite high performance program, which is exclusive, or they can enter our development program to then develop, you know, as an all-rounder to then hopefully graduate and you know, represent us at a competitive level.
So website, social media, yeah. Is that the sort of first intro in?
Yeah, DubaiCityFC.com. We've got a fantastic website. We're very proud of it. As I said earlier, you know, each player's got their own personal login. So they've got that full library and platform to really, truly engage with how am I performing. Yeah. You know, and that conversation should now, we believe, should be led by the player, not the player asking the coach.
And in terms, I mean, we've talked a lot about players. You've mentioned there about the fact that all your coaches have been through their badges. They're very highly qualified and things like that. But, you know, weekends, it depends on volunteers, depends on coaches. Is there sort of the option as well, maybe not now, but further down the line, if people want to get involved in the coaching side, they could do it through City as well?
Yeah, so we run a CPD program, a coach education program. I've got guys that have worked with the English FA and guys that have got a passion just for coach education. So we deliver these programs termly with our school partners to upskill their PE departments. Parents are welcome, but obviously parents have busy schedules and the timings are kind of off on peak, not off peak. But 100%, you know, there's a platform there to upskill, further develop, and you know, get an insight as to coaching the CFC way.
Fascinating. Get yourself on the website, get yourself on social media as well. Big question that's been on my lips, and I'm sure others are asking. Kit as well. I mean, I should be asking you, is that kit all right? Is the kit's good?
The badge is good. I've seen the badge. I like that. I've
not Thanks, Chris.
I don't think I've seen the kit. Is it modelled on Devon Vales?
Could be. It's red.
Okay, it's definitely modelled on Devon Vales then.
Devon Vale Aberdeen, bit of a hybrid.
Yes, I like it.
Yeah. Proud in the red. He likes the badge as well. Terry, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much indeed for your time. We kept you over time.
Thanks
it's
for
been
having
that
me.
Much. So thanks so much indeed. All the best to all the team at City. So thanks very much indeed.
Thanks, guys.
We're going to take a short break. We've got the news headlines for you. Then we're around the grounds. We're going to talk tennis with Espy. We've got the Six Nations just around the corner. And we want to talk more triathlon. ITU triathlon coming to the UAE yet again. Internationals in town. We'll be finding out more shortly.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.